We're in James, the book of James, chapter 3, starting verse 13, if you'd like to turn there. God wants us to be wise and not wise guys. I know nowadays, I guess there's a TV program where they use the word wise guy to mean somebody who belongs to some kind of criminal organization or something. But I use the word wise guy in a more broad sense. Of course, if you belong to a criminal organization, you are a wise guy. Not that you're wise, but you're a wise guy. But to me, a wise guy is somebody who thinks they know it all but don't. A wise guy is somebody who thinks he has wisdom, but he's always shooting himself in the foot. He has ideas about how the world works, and he has wisdom in a worldly sense, and it works for a certain amount of time. He'll use his worldly wisdom to amass a certain amount of money or prestige or power or satisfaction in worldly things, but it comes out empty. And in the end, it does not work. And in the end, worldly wisdom ends up being detrimental to our lives, not helpful. It comes up bankrupt. Godly wisdom, on the other hand, leads us to a future and all of eternity. Godly wisdom leads to peace and joy. Godly wisdom leads to a good relationship with one another and with God. In this book of James and the things that we've looked at so far, there's an implicit comparison between godly wisdom and worldly wisdom. And in our passage, he spells it out much more clearly. But you can notice, godly wisdom is the wisdom that recognizes that trials can be stepping stones to growth. Worldly wisdom sees trials as a means to failure and disappointment. Godly wisdom looks at other people as of being value in and of themselves because they're made in God's image. Worldly wisdom looks at people as objects to be used, opportunities. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And I want to make sure I know who I know. And so we make sure that we impress the rich and the famous or the powerful or the knowledgeable or anyone who is useful to us. And we shun those who sort of get in the way and are just sort of peripheral. Well, we're not supposed to hold our faith with an attitude of personal favoritism, are we? Godly wisdom versus worldly wisdom. We're also in godly wisdom, when worldly wisdom and worldly wisdom, we think in terms of having a position, a teaching office, being a preacher or a leader or something like that, as something that we can boast about. We get the attention, we get the power, we get the pats on the back. Worldly wisdom sees those things as a responsibility and a work that needs to be done in a way that it glorifies God. And so those things would need to be entered into with fear and trembling and with a certain amount of humility. Worldly wisdom sees speech as something that we use to get our own way, whether it's by gossip or lies or manipulation or threats or bullying or arguing or all sorts of different ways. Our tongue provides all sorts of opportunities to push and to shove and to wheedle and to connive and all sorts of things to get what we want. And it can be successful in that way in a certain extent. But it falls flat in the end, doesn't it? When you look at all of the broken relationships and when you look at all of the damage that's done, godly wisdom uses the tongue to heal. Godly wisdom uses the tongue to reconcile. Godly wisdom uses the tongue to save and to mend. And so even in what we looked at in just the past few lessons and the past sections in James, it's talking about godly wisdom. And here in chapter 3, starting in verse 13, he lays it out in very clear terms, the contrast between the two kinds of wisdom. Let me read. James chapter 3, starting in verse 13. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, and demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So on the one hand, you have worldly wisdom that produces disorder in every evil thing, and you have godly wisdom which sows the seeds of peace and righteousness. On the one hand, you have worldly wisdom that is seeking our own things, our own pride, our own selfishness, our own way. Our motives in worldly wisdom all have to do about me, myself, and I. Isn't that the way it works? When you see somebody who's being a wise guy, what are they doing? Look at what I got. Look at what I did. Look at the car I've got. Look at the house I've got. You know, all that kind of stuff, right? I'm going to get mine. I have my goals, and I'm making my goals, and I'm doing what I can to get there. And nobody's standing in my way. Well, that's what selfish ambition is all about. It's about me. And it doesn't care about who you climb over, or whose back you stab, or who you have to manipulate or use. And so where you have jealousy and selfish ambition, there's disorder in every evil thing. You think about selfish ambition. I mean, you've got one office and two politicians. There you go. What happens when it happens in churches? Too many folks want to be the chief, right? And it's about a guy's will, one man's will against another man's will, and God, what happens to God's will? Well, that's sort of shoved off in the corner, isn't it? It's disorder in every evil thing. Do not have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart. Do not be arrogant, so lie against the truth. Sometimes when we're successful in physical things, we get pretty cocky, you know. I've made so much money in stocks, or I've gotten my promotions, and blah, 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 blah. And we're getting all arrogant, and we think we ought to do this and that and the other thing, and we forget who we really belong to and what we're really supposed to be doing in this world. And we start to think we've got it all put together, when in fact, because we have our hearts aligned just to serving ourselves, we've lost the whole ball of wax. And we don't realize it. And that's the pity of it all. Because we serve, in serving ourselves, eventually it will collapse. In serving ourselves exclusively, we end up hurting other people, we end up using other people, we end up producing all sorts of conflict, and then some of the most important things of our lives start to fall apart. And so, if we see jealousy and selfish ambition, we got to have our way no matter what. We need to pause. And don't be a wise guy. Don't be somebody who flatters himself into thinking that he knows it all, but look and say, hey, wait a minute. Am I going the right way? One of the difficulties, and the big differences here between the two kinds of wisdom have to do with our motives and our direction. In 1 John chapter 2, John tells us, do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Now, he's not telling us to be monks, okay? To live in a cave somewhere or anything like that. But to cling on to the stuff of this world like it's the only thing that there is. That it's the whole purpose of life, and the things of the world that are here are to serve us. That's the idea. That's the idea we're to avoid. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. And the world is passing away, as also its lusts. But the one who does the will of God lives forever. The stuff of this world is temporary. So what happens? You think you're a wise guy and you're using all the rules and pulling all the strings and meeting all the right people and you're getting all of the success and you're mounting, you're accumulating all of this money and that's so wonderful and you think you've got everything. And what happens when you die? Goodbye. I mean, you can't take it with you. It's just dust. And what was all of that effort for? And what do you have of any lasting value? And that's what John is saying here. And what's important to us is what we lust after. The lust of the eyes, that's, oh, I see it, I want it. I see it, I want to have to have it. That's sort of the idea. It's the stuff that envy and jealousy are built of. I've got to have it. I've got to have it now. Get me another charge card so I can get it right away. It can do about, I've got to have that girl. When you were a kid, you know what the kind of stupid things you used to do to try to impress a girl? And how you pretend to be somebody else so that she'd like you when actually what you were acting like wasn't like yourself at all. So even if she did like you, it wasn't you. Was it? It's isn't that worldly, stupid, wise guy wisdom? I mean, isn't it something that you grow out of? It should be. Well, how many of us do that with our jobs or with other things? We have these desires, and we're going to set our hearts on trying to get them, and we miss the whole point of what our life is about. We miss the whole point about what is really of value. Our relationship with God, our relationship with one another. Where are we going in eternity? The lusts of the flesh, the things that our bodies desire, and then the boastful pride of life. The boastful pride of life, that's where he's telling us not to be arrogant and proud and lie against the truth. I got all the stuff. Well, God's probably saying, so what? I made it. I made everything. I spoke it into existence. So that doesn't impress me. Why should I be impressed? When you're meeting your maker, when I'm meeting my maker, how's that going to work? We need to remember that that kind of wisdom is empty and it's destructive. And when we're just pursuing our selfish desires, we end up causing all sorts of disorder and pain all around us. But when we have wisdom from above, look what happens. Verse 17. The wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Wisdom is a peacemaker. Wisdom is a tool for relationship between God and man and man and man. Wisdom, godly wisdom, is a priceless commodity. It's first of all pure. If you have worldly wisdom, what you say is what you're saying to get what you want to get. If you have worldly wisdom, what you say is designed to work with the truth and bring about God's will. Isn't that the way it's supposed to be? Isn't that supposed to be consistent? Aren't we supposed to be consistent with what is real and what is true? And what is God's will? It's not about what I want. It's about what God wants. And that doesn't change from situation to situation. That shouldn't change from sermon to sermon. I mean, if I were running for office, I would be tempted to preach it according to what the audience wanted to hear, so I get more votes that way, right? That's worldly wisdom. But if you have godly wisdom, what are you going to do? You're going to try to do it God's way consistently in the content of what you have to say, and also in the tenor or in the tone and the attitude with which you're going to say it. And it's going to be consistent. It's going to be unwavering and without hypocrisy. To bring about what's best, to bring about what's best for everybody, not just me. This is what love is about. It's not about just surrendering my will to everybody else. You're supposed to love me, so you're supposed to do what I tell you to do. That isn't love. That's a surrendering of your will and a relinquishing of your responsibility before God. If you just surrender your will to the will of other people, first of all, it can't be done. You'll go crazy because everybody have different ideas about what you're supposed to do. And everybody will have a claim on more time than you have. And everybody will have a claim on more money than you have. So you can't do it. You'll go crazy. And it's a lack of responsibility on your own part, because if God gave you your stuff, right? And He gave me my stuff. And I'm supposed to use my stuff the way God wants me to. And the way God wants me to think. He wants me to think like He thinks, and have the attitudes that He has, and use it for His glory. And so it's not just surrendering to other people's wills, it's surrendering to other people's needs. And how can I best, with what I have, help other people? How can I use my words to best heal and help and reconcile? How can I use my money to heal and help and reconcile? How can I use my time to do those things? It's not about me. Godly wisdom is not about me. It's about God. It's not about other people's will. It's about God's will. And so it's pure. We don't have dual motives. You know, you ever pretend to be exercising what's true and what's right, but it also happens to be advantageous to you too? We've done that, haven't we? You know, this is God's will. It also lines my pockets. It's God's will. Wisdom from above is pure. Its motives are straight. We ought to want it because it's right, not because it's advantageous to us. It's advantageous to everyone. It's also peaceable and gentle and reasonable. And something that is hard and it's frustrating, but it's true. When we don't get our way, we get frustrated and we want to fix it, right? Isn't that the way we do? I mean, that's why we get frustrated, right? But the thing is, I can't fix you, and you can't fix me, and I can't make you do what I want you to do, or make you be what I want you to be. Can I? No. I mean, we each choose what we're going to do. We each choose who we're going to be. We each choose what we're going to practice. I can try to persuade. I can teach. But how else can you make changes with somebody else? You can show them, maybe. Demonstrate. But you cannot force a change. If you're forcing a change, what are you trying to do? In a way, you're almost trying to enslave the person, aren't you? You will be a Christian. You pull out a gun and you hold it to their head and we fill a baptistry up, and what good does that do? Does it cause a new person to come out? causes a scared, terrified person to come out who's going to run away as soon as they can. You can't force a conversion. You can't force an action. Well, if you're the boss of a company, you can make your employees do some different stuff. I guess you can. And in a way, you have a right to within limits, but you can't change the people on the inside, right? And that doesn't always necessarily get their loyalty or their friendship either, does it? And we can't do it husband and wives and that kind of thing. We can train our children, but ultimately they're going to have to decide if they're going to follow the right path. And what does that mean? Well, if we understand that, we're going to be peaceable. We're not going to be fighting to try to force things that we can't change, but we'll be trying to produce peace and trying to work with people, and we'll be reasonable and gentle and self-controlled in how we deal with people. We may have to be firm. We may have to take actions because we have accountability for ourselves. I have accountability for myself and what I do and what I say. And I have a right, and I sometimes have a need to say, no, I'm not going to do that. And no, I'm not going to do that. And I know you want me to, but I'm not. I don't believe it's right, or I don't believe it's appropriate, or whatever it is, but it's my choice, and that's what it's going to be. But I don't have to have a big stink and a big fight over it. I can make my choices, and you can make yours. And we can listen to one another, and that's what being reasonable is all about. Somebody who is wise in a godly sense is willing to sit down and listen to what you have to say, even if you disagree with it. Why do you believe this? And really want to understand. Be quick to listen and slow to speak. And slow to anger, because the anger of man does not accomplish the righteousness of God. Where did I see that? I think it was just a chapter or two before this, wasn't it? Reasonable. You ever just, what do you mean? You can't talk to that guy because as soon as it goes the wrong way, you're gone, right? That's not godly wisdom. That's not godly wisdom. Even if you disagree, you can listen up and respond with gentleness. And it's full of mercy and good fruits. We want what's best, and doing what's wrong doesn't produce what's best. We're to overcome evil with good and not be overcome by evil. And so this is the contrast that we're being given in the book of James, and we'll find it all throughout the scriptures. And it's a challenge for us to practice. The next chapter, he talks about how all of this turmoil is coming about because the pleasures and the lusts that we want to enjoy are causing us to be in conflict with each other. Well, it's the same kind of thing as what we're talking about today. To pursue God's wisdom is to pursue a way of righteousness and peace and love. We sow the seed of righteousness and peace by pursuing God's wisdom. Let me read from Proverbs, and then I'll invite you to come forward if you have prayers or want to learn more about the Lord. In Proverbs chapter 1, starting in verse 20, the whole book of Proverbs is about wisdom in its many forms. And the first part of the book of Proverbs is a really Solomon's sales job for wisdom. And he was the wisest man on earth at the time. And God gave him that wisdom. It says, wisdom shouts in the street. She lifts her voice in the square. At the head of the noisy street, she cries out. At the entrance of the gates in the city, she utters her sayings. How long, O naive ones, will you love being simple-minded? And scoffers delight themselves in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Turn to my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit on you, and I will make my words known to you. Because I called and you refused, I stretched out my hand and no one paid attention, and you neglected all my counsel and did not want my reproof. I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your dread comes. When your dread comes like a storm and your calamity comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then they will call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me, because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would not accept my counsel, and they spurned all my reproof. So they shall eat the fruit of their own way and be satiated with their own desires. For the waywardness of the naive will kill them, and the complacency of fools will destroy them. But he who listens to me shall live securely and will be at ease from the dread of evil. Wise guys laugh at real wisdom. They know better. Turn the other cheek. Oh, balderdash. That's for sissies. You get mockery from godly wisdom, right? Do that, I'll lose money. Do that, I'll never get that promotion. Do that, you fill in the blank. A rejection of wisdom because we're wise guys. We think we got it already put together. But those who are humble enough to accept God's wisdom, they have the resources when the trials come. They have the resources to face eternity. And that's what I'm calling on all of us to do, is to say yes to wisdom's call this morning. If you need the prayers of the saints, if you want to put the Lord on in baptism or have any other requests, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.